Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope you're keeping safe and sound and healthy and you and yours are all doing okay. It's still strange and weird and scary out there, folks, so look after yourselves. Wash your hands, wear a mask, keep your distance, be sensible. You have no idea how much of a difference it might make one way or the other. So look, I'm recording this just after Arsenal's 3-2 win over Benfica in the Europa League. I mean, there's ways to do things, easy ways, less easy ways, difficult ways, extremely difficult ways. And then I think this football club that we're all wedded to, that we have no choice but to be on the ride with, They take it to the next fucking level, don't they? They really do. If there's a way of making life virtually impossible for yourself, we will find a way to do it. We could die of hypothermia while being sunblasted in a 120-degree desert. We could drown in an inch of water or something. Somehow, some way, we'd just be able to do it. And tonight, of course, we were on the brink of, what's the word I'm looking for here? What is it when you go out? When you're elimination. That's it. I knew it began with E. My brain isn't quite with it tonight. But yeah, look, we were on the brink of elimination, not because Benfica were good, but because we did some stupid things. And look, we pulled it out of the bag. We scored some goals. Good goals, too. And I think we'll talk about those. But holy shit, they don't have put you through the ringer, this football club. So, look, we're going to get on with the discussion. And I'm delighted to welcome two guests with me on the show this evening. First up, he's one half of the Stadio podcast on Ringer FC. You can also hear him on Righty's House with Ian Wright, also on Ringer FC. It's Ryan Hun. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Very well, thanks, Andrew. You?
I'm all right, thank you. And we also have from Arseblog News and the co-presenter of the Left Field podcast, it's Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Good evening.
On the holy fuck, we make life tough for ourselves ometer, where does tonight stand for you?
Yeah, it's definitely up there, isn't it? Mm. I mean, I think just after we made those final substitutions, and we were, well, not the final substitutions, but the substitutions kind of going for the game, and we suddenly seemed to just completely lose it. And, you know, there was a 5-minute spell where we couldn't get anywhere near the ball. And I was just like, we're going out of here. There's no way we can recover from this. I don't know what the players are doing. And then that little genius Saka just stepped up and saved us. And, you know, fair play to Aubameyang. I mean, stayed onside, got in the right place, nailed it.
Ryan, you know, how was your heart during that second half?
It was actually quite zen. I keep making a joke on the Stadio podcast this year about how I'm quite zen about Arsenal. I know football's escapism for us all, but I refuse to let this football club bother me during a pandemic in the way that it would do when it was very normal. So I try and stay quite zen about Arsenal until afterwards. But yeah, they did give us a moment or two, but weirdly, I just thought, I was just like, well, you know, we're playing our home game in Athens, so if we're going to go out, then I could probably deal with it a little bit more than it would be in a normal season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I wasn't necessarily on board with the whole, look, this is the most Arsenal thing of all time. Like, you know, people would go, yeah, isn't it the most Arsenal thing of all time to go out during a pandemic on the away goals rule in a game, a tie, you'd play both games basically away from home. I mean, it would be kind of funny, but not really. You know, so I'm glad we got there in the end. I think that's probably the thing we should celebrate. There's obviously a lot to get into and a lot we can discuss during the game. But, you know, the fact that we got there in the end and we did manage to pull it out of the hat after making life as difficult for ourselves as we could possibly make it. But, Andrew, you know, we started, I want to say we started well, but I'm not necessarily sure we did. I think what worried me in the early stages of the game was the slowness of the build-up. And there's, I think, a fine line, isn't there, between slow and patient and just ponderous and not quite intense enough. And I think we were too far the other way.
Yeah, there were definitely a couple of moments in the sort of first 15, 20 minutes where David Luiz was doing that thing where he kind of receives the ball, stands on it, does a lot of pointing, waits for a while, passes it to Xhaka, gets it back. And you're kind of like, come on, guys, like, there's a game to win here. But to be fair, I mean, look, I felt off the back of the first half of the first game, to be honest, that we were a better side, that we had more quality, that they didn't really have a whole lot going on up front. It was really just a case of asserting ourselves. And like you say, it was more frustrating that we didn't kind of just go ahead and take the, you know, ball by the, you know, the game by the scruff of the neck, the ball by the horns. I think I was going with two directions there. Yeah, look, I mean, it worked out in the end, but I do want to see more from this Arsenal team when it comes to just a bit more pace, a bit more tempo, you know? I mean, we've actually gone and managed to get a whole load of collective players finally into the team over the last few weeks, and it did feel like we were maybe labouring a little bit too much, waiting for Aubameyang to make runs before making passes and stuff. But it's getting there. I do feel like we're a work in progress and we're positive. And I feel like even if we'd gone out tonight, I could still see something there to build on. So I'm trying to sort of stay positive, I guess.
Ryan, I mean, what do you think? I mean, I take Andrew's point there. When you look at the front four, Aubameyang, Saka, Smith Rowe, Odegaard, there is definitely a bit of zip to the way that they play. But I think behind them, you know, we don't quite match it. You know, Granit Xhaka is Granit Xhaka. We all know that he plays the game kind of at his own pace, even though I think he does try to be a bit more positive than people give him credit for. Danny Ceballos, who I'm sure we'll come on to in terms of the night that he had and one he'll want to forget in a very big hurry. You know, again, is somebody who likes a lot of touches on the ball. Hector Bellerin, you know, I looked at him tonight and I see him down the right-hand side and he kind of looks like somebody just standing on the edge of a crowd at times rather than somebody who's looking to contribute. And Kieran Tierney, who made a big contribution, obviously, again, I'm not 100% sure he's like fully fit. So there was a bit of a dichotomy between what we had going forward and trying to connect that with the people we had behind who weren't quite playing at the pace that those guys further forward need.
Yeah, I think that's where you see the importance of Thomas Partey already. He's probably, I'm not sure if you and James were talking about it on the Ask Us Extra, but he's probably the quickest, he's made the quickest transition from literally being a new signing to being like a new signing, where he, like when he came on, I think he just made everything gel more.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a unicorn in terms of a player that Arsenal have had for a while, and that he has the ability to kind of calm everything down when it needs to be calm, but also inject some pace into Arsenal's progressive play when it needs to. And I think that they just don't have another midfielder like that. And I think to your point about Hector Bellerin, I think Hector's an intriguing one at the moment, because I think that in Saka, for the first time, he has a potential partner that he could build a really good relationship with on that right-hand side, that I think actually they both kind of complement each other's skill sets. For example, like when Saka actually made his goal, I know we'll probably come onto it, but for the first assist, like his movement inside, because he was just basically getting no joy outside. I think Hector is smart enough to then figure that out to make the movement outside, whereas he's often asked a lot of time to come inside. So I think it's just building these little partnerships, and Arsenal's starting 11 has been so all over the place all season. Like even if you look at the centre-back pairing for tonight compared to a couple of days ago or even a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But I think that with everything that's been going on, in addition to a bit of a topsy-turvy, or what's the word, like the squad hasn't been able to build any sense of momentum. And therefore, I think what you're missing is these little partnerships all over the pitch. So I think that that's maybe where you see the quite a stark shift from the front and the back. Because we were saying on Righty's House last week, I think that three behind Aubameyang looks like it's going to be really fun when they, well, hopefully when they get a rest and then they get to gel a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of creative talent in the team. And actually, for the first time, I was looking at a game where I looked at the bench and thought, okay, well, we've got loads of options here. We do actually genuinely have loads of forward options. You know, how you like them individually, you know, from 1 to 10 is an objective or subjective thing for everybody out there. But when you think about Pepe, Martinelli, of course, neither of whom got on the pitch. Willian, Lacazette, there's somebody else I'm forgetting as well, I'm sure, you know. But Thomas Partey, of course, you know, to add that quality in midfield. There was something about the bench. So when we did go 2-1 down, and it was a bit of a like, oh, fuck, here we go moment, I did at least, Andrew, gain some confidence from what we had on the bench and what we had in order to try and turn it around. So I'll come back to that, though. But let's talk the first goal, and let's talk about Bukayo Saka. Look, Aubameyang's movement, he hangs on the shoulder of the defender. The pass is, you know, Fabregas-esque, that kind of little cut inside pass. Great finish. But, you know, Saka, whatever's gone on with him in the last number of weeks, he really has become such an important part of this team. And you can understand why he doesn't get rested.
Yeah, I can absolutely understand why he doesn't get rested. And I thought it was really interesting that actually, you know, he picked up the ball a lot off Odegaard, it felt like, in the first half. There was a lot going on between the two of them and a connection there that maybe Smith Rowe potentially lacked with Odegaard. I don't know whether it was just a kind of tendency on Odegaard's sort of part to sort of hover towards Saka's side of the pitch. But I thought they looked like good together, dangerous together, like they were capable of causing mischief together. And I mean, it was just a fantastic pass. It was exactly the type of pass that you know that Aubameyang absolutely loves. And, you know, you can tell that Aubameyang absolutely loves playing with Saka. Like, there's this just genuine chemistry between the two. And I know there's a big age gap, but there seems like there's a real sort of almost father-son connection going on there. Knew exactly what he was going to do, finished it exactly as you want it to be finished. I mean, he couldn't have done it any better. I don't think it was perfect, the finish. And obviously off the back of having been offside so many times in the away game in Rome last week, like, it was just really interesting to see that when the ball is played that split second earlier, it makes all the difference. I think we did kind of have a bit of a tendency last week to hold on to it a little bit too long. I think, you know, with Ceballos and Odegaard, there is a little bit of a, you know, they like having the ball at their feet, but Saka's a bit quicker sometimes. And that definitely made the difference today.
The offside thing was interesting. Watching Aubameyang, he was hanging offside and then moving back. And, you know, obviously that gives the defender something to think about. He got it right for that one. There were a couple of other moments where it didn't quite go as well as you would like. But, you know, were you a little worried, Ryan, that we didn't quite capitalize on that? You know, that was a goal, was about, what, 20-odd minutes into the game? I can't remember exactly when we scored that. But then you're looking to sort of kick on and really dominate the rest of that half. Instead, it just felt a little bit slow, didn't it? You know, and then we get into that issue, what was it, about 21 minutes we scored, and then just before the halftime break, they score what I think is a really excellent goal. The free kick, the giveaway was clumsy. I don't know why Ceballos was, you know, dropping quite as deep as he did, but, you know, the foul is one thing, but when you see a guy put it in the top corner like that, it feels like you're being really harshly punished for, you know, a fairly simple foul.
Yeah, I think I saw a few people tweeting just being like, of course it went in. You know, of course it went in. It was just felt very like, well, yeah, of course it did. But I think you're right with in terms of not capitalizing on that lead. But I don't know whether it's just me, I don't know, being a little bit revisionist, but this seems to happen quite a lot during knockout stages in European competitions for Arsenal, where we kind of get a goal ahead in the second leg. Or maybe it's just, I just assume this happens so much that it could be any game. But where, I don't know, because Benfica are, I mean, it's, I think, in not wanting to digress too much, but it is a bit of a strange tie, this, because I think we still look as Arsenal fans at some of the Europa League ties that we play through the prism of who we were playing at Champions League, and that we're still at that kind of level. Whereas ultimately it's what, a mid-table side in the Premier League against a side that's 15 points off top in Liga NOS. So it's just a weird, it's a weird kind of thing to figure out, like, actually, is this a good result? Are they better than us this season? Should we be absolutely hammering these? And I think that when you, when they went one goal ahead, you could see that it was a little bit like, well, we can't concede.
Mm.
So do we keep pushing? It reminded me a little bit of the, was it the Monaco tie a few years? Was it the Monaco tie? Or it might have even been the Olympiacos one, where it was just Arsenal gets caught sometimes in these European knockout moments. And I think there's a little bit of a bit of muscle memory kicks in, there's where they're just expecting the worst anyway.
Yeah, there's been a few, haven't there, where it's
whenever it happened, when the free kick went in, I thought I've seen this movie. Mm. I think I've seen this movie.
Well, I mean, it is a weird one to try and get on top of. But I can't escape the fact, you know, that Benfica aren't really that good. The three goals that they've got in this game were, okay, one is a brilliant free kick. Take nothing away from the guy. But when you give a professional footballer a free kick from 22, 23 yards out, that's the perfect position. You know, these guys practice this all the time. So, you know, they've got a reasonable chance of causing you a problem with that. And that's kind of a gift that we gave them from the goal penalty. And then the second goal that they got tonight, of course, was a horrendous mistake. So I think, you know, you can look at Benfica and say, well, they've scored three times against us. But, you know, I think, as I said on the blog today, Thursday, on the day of the game, that, like, the biggest opponent we have is ourselves.
Mm.
And we went some way to making that very true by I won't say gifting them both goals, but certainly playing a big part.
Yeah, I mean, they both came from Arsenal errors. Well, specifically Dani Ceballos errors, and I think that's just, it was a little bit unfortunate. I think it was a great free kick, but, you know, maybe 8 times out of 10 that doesn't bother Bernd Leno as much as it did. Mm. And then the header was, I know we'll probably come onto it, but yeah, I mean, again, it's just one of those that I wonder if you got a call. And it's kind of like when you see them break, you kind of think, well, there must be a call there somewhere. So I'm always a little bit like with the Alisson thing a few weeks ago against Leicester, for example, I was like, a lot of that depends on whether he's called or not, because there is, it kind of takes two to tango in a scenario like that. The person who makes the error often cops the flack. But that's why everyone else is there, right? You know, you're communicating with each other. So I'd be really interested to know what was actually being said when the ball was, like, kind of heading forward.
I would too. I mean, they were saying on the commentary, well, there was no talking there, no communication. Of course, nobody can hear whether there was communication or not, or what was shouted. I mean, it's a daft piece of play from Ceballos, Andrew. But, you know, just before we delve into that a bit more, I mean, where do you stand on the quality of Benfica versus the quality of Arsenal? Does it, you know, does it say much about, or as much about us, that we made it as hard for ourselves against a team who, without the gifts that we gave them, really didn't cause us any problems?
I sense throughout the, you know, both legs that they were a side that have got some decent technical quality, but they didn't seem to have a guy up front that they necessarily trusted who's going to be a kind of, you know, a talisman for them. I always felt when they broke, and I think we saw that a couple of times in the first half, that there seemed to be this huge gap between a couple of runners and they didn't seem to get anybody in the box. It's something that we've had a problem with in the past as well. I mean, frankly, when we came into the tie, you think, okay, Benfica, pedigree, history, you know, great players, all the rest of it. But I did also look at their, like, main defence and think Vertonghen, Otamendi, and I was like, they're ageing Premier League players. There's nothing to be worried about there. And then you look at Tarabt in the midfield, and I was thinking, okay, he's had a weird roller coaster career, but again, it's someone you know, but you also know him not to be a superstar. And there was just something about it. I just kept thinking, like, we need to come into this game feeling confident, you know, believing in ourselves. And I know that that's maybe difficult for some of the younger guys because they really have never done it before. You know, they're being trusted with a lot of responsibility. And there's a lot of pressure that comes with that. But I always sensed that we were the better team. And if we went out, I mean, I was so frustrated after the first leg. I really was, because I felt like they were there for the taking. And I also felt like there's something about the way you treat some of those games and the knock-on effect it has with your league campaign, and we knew we were going to have City. We knew that was going to be a game that, you know, Arteta wouldn't want to lose. So he was going to play a relatively strong side. We know that you've got Leicester coming up as well. So, you know, you kind of want to really go for it in the first game, and then, you know, I don't know. But we've got there in the end. I'm glad we did. But, you know, there are going to be better sides coming up for sure.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Just sticking with you, Andrew, Dani Ceballos, you know, who I thought was, you know, he was having an okay game in the centre of midfield until it all went pretty wrong for him. That's not usually what he does, in fairness. I think he's been a pretty solid player for us. It just feels a bit typical that tonight was the night where he had one of those nights for maybe the first time in his Arsenal career, you know, when we were perhaps more worried about what we might do to ourselves than what Benfica might do to us.
Yeah, I've literally just seen he's tweeted. He said, "This is football and you can always learn and make up your errors. Up to the next round. Thank goodness. Let's go, Gunners."
Thank you. Did he say thank goodness?
Yeah, he did. Which is
credit to his English teacher.
Pretty good, indeed. I've not seen a player more relieved to go off than he did in that moment. I don't think anyone's ever expected a substitution as much as he did as well. wasn't his night. I said to you just before coming into recording, when you're writing a match report, you've always got one eye on the game, but you've never really got two. Mm. And we had a corner, and I was sort of tapping away thinking, okay, whatever. And suddenly I looked up and the bloke was rounding Leno, and I was like, how on earth has that happened? And it wasn't until I saw the replay and I looked up, I was like, oh dear, that is not pretty. But I mean, it's a goal we've conceded before. I'm almost certain we've made these types of errors previously. I mean, like you said, I had nothing, you know, I didn't have a kind of black mark against Danny off the back of the first half. I mean, yeah, he made a slightly clumsy challenge that the guy scored from 25 yards on the free kick. Mm. But it wasn't like, you know, he'd done anything particularly wrong. I thought he'd been quite central to a lot of our play. I think in terms of providing backup to Partey, he's been very solid. And I do like him on the ball. He's not always as quick as maybe you might hope, but by and large, no complaints. It was one of those nights for him, and to have two of those errors go against him in one game, I mean, I'm not sure he would have bounced back from that given the pressure on the situation if we hadn't have won.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see what kind of a reaction he would have had. Because I guess everybody who's played football has made mistakes and you feel terrible when something like that happens. And if you ultimately were responsible for the elimination from the Europa League and all the fallout that would have entailed, you know, on a night like tonight, I've seen a lot of discussion, a lot of talk about all of that. We might touch on it in a few moments' time. So let me ask you this honestly, Ryan. When he made his substitutions, I think Thomas Partey for Dani Ceballos felt very obvious to me. We're in a game where we need to score goals. We need to make goals. Not just one. We had to score two. And he threw on Willian. How do you... I mean, was that brave? Is it kind of stupid? Is it like working by the law of averages? Like at some point he has to do something, you know, and when you've got Pepe on the bench who'd been playing well in the previous couple of weeks, and you've got Gabriel Martinelli who everybody wants to see on the pitch because we all have high hopes about what he can do. I mean, if you want your manager to be single-minded, if you see that as a positive aspect to his character, there was an example of it, right?
I mean, yeah, I think our manager is pretty single-minded, actually. And my honest answer is I have no idea whether it was inspired or ludicrous. But I mean, results, it got the result, I think. I think I was actually texting with a friend just after the game, and we agreed that, you know, Arteta does quite often get his substitutions wrong or cop quite a lot of flack for getting his substitutions wrong.
Mm.
But the way that everything panned out tonight, you can't really complain. And especially I actually tweeted, I was just like, is that a Willian assist? Not because it was like, I knew it was him who played the ball to Tierney, but I was just like, does that go down? Because Tierney still had quite a lot to do. So I don't know whether, you know, the three touches and going round another player before burying it is, you know, takes the assist away or what. But he did get the assist. And I think that the only reason I can assume that, I mean, I'm not wild about Willian on the left-hand side anyway. But then again, we're not in training sessions every day. So I'm kind of inclined to give the manager the benefit of the doubt and stuff like this, because they clearly see so much more, and they know what they're trying to do than obviously we have access to. But the only reason I assume that he maybe went for Willian instead of Pepe, for example, is that I think he wanted to keep the ball moving. And I think that Pepe, I think in that kind of stage of the game, in that kind of game state, I think sometimes keeping the ball moving, I mean, you saw it in Manchester City against Gladbach, even though people were saying that they were super dominant. I think their two goals came from them just circulating the ball to the point where Gladbach could barely breathe anymore, and then they kind of got them. So I think it was more on that, as opposed to being like, Willian is going to go and Royal the Rovers us to like European victory. I think it was maybe just a more of a solid substitution, and it kind of paid off. I'd feel weird criticizing it enough.
Sure. No, I mean, you know? I get where you're coming from. I think I saw some quotes afterwards. I haven't had much time to look at the post game reaction and what he said, but I think he talked about how having Willian allowed Tierney to get into dangerous areas, and to be fair, he got into one particularly dangerous area. I think there's the debate, you know, on what is exactly an assist is a really interesting one. Like, to me, Saka for Aubameyang, those are assists.
Yeah.
Playing a pass to a guy who then has to do a lot to score the goal, I'm not 100% convinced that you can really call it an assist. It feels like the sort of classification that works for fantasy football players, because they have to score points over, you know, every player has to score a certain amount of points, you know? But I think, Andrew, one of the things that was interesting was, I watched Willian when he came on, and I was looking at him going, look at him there standing still. Look, he's standing. And then he sort of burst into life in a way that I haven't seen very often this season from Willian. We don't see it particularly often. And I wonder if he might look back on this and realize that, you know, if you actually sprint a little bit and move a little bit, you can get into areas where you can play what could be classified as an assist, even if the purists among us might not necessarily put it down as one.
Yeah, I mean, if it's taken it, you know, what is it, 7-8 months of the season for Willian to realise that a bit of running is beneficial, then so be it. I mean, he's earned about 15 million quid in the process, so good for him.
Nice work if he can get it.
Look, I mean, there can't have been too many Arsenal fans who didn't kind of do a double take and a sort of, oh, for fuck's sake, when they saw Willian coming on. And look, I know it's almost kind of gone beyond parody at this point. And I really want the guy to come good. I really do, because, you know, he's had such a stellar career that I know that he's not a bad footballer. But I just, it's just not so far happened for him at Arsenal. And it must be a bit of a kick in the teeth to be behind three guys who are under the age of 22 in the pecking order now. I do think it's interesting, though, because we've obviously made a commitment to the player, and Arteta must be very, very conscious of that. And he must be very, very conscious of the guy's age, his standing in the squad, and the fact that we can't really afford to just let another Ozil situation kind of play out. So I think it's really important that he does give him the opportunities. And that was a big one. He really asked him to go into a big game, and at the exact moment when we needed something to turn around. I'm not sure that he wasn't a game changer per se, but he played his part, and that's good. That may help his confidence, and, you know, maybe he'll get another start at the weekend, perhaps. I don't know. I mean, we just need to see him build his confidence back up bit by bit.
I mean, can we talk, Andrew, about the Kieran Tierney reaction to the goal? A lot of I love a like an understated celebration I always really like. Like, you know, a guy who scores in the first couple of minutes of a game and doesn't go crazy because he knows it's the first couple of minutes of a game. And Tierney didn't run around looking for everyone to hug him. He was like, come on, you fuckers. You know, people have likened it to the goal and the celebration to a certain extent to Bakary Sagna against Spurs a few years ago. You remember that header where he said, fuck this, I'm not taking it anymore. Get in the fucking back of the net, you ball, and we'll go from here, which is exactly what happened. It felt a little bit like that with Tierney's goal tonight and the way he reacted to it.
Like 100%. I tweeted exactly the same thing. It was all I could think about after the goal. And there was something about how hard he hit the ball that kind of added to that. Like, he was really like, this is not a scrappy goal. This is get in the back of the net. Let's get on with it. And that, to be honest, did give me some hope. You know, it teed me up as a supporter sitting on the sofa, you know, 1,000 miles away. So I can only imagine, like, amongst the teammates, you know, it must have, it did something. I mean, it was so important that we got that goal quickly, because it would have been very easy for the game just to drift away at us, from us at that point. Mm. And given our record of, you know, we've struggled so much for goals this season, I wouldn't have backed us to score two in the last 10 minutes for sure. So, brilliant from Tierney. I mean, it's just everything you want from a player. And I guess it's incredible how important he is for a guy who's been in and out of the team so much this season. He brings so much energy. I mean, almost every player on the pitch was looking to give him the ball. I thought Ødegaard in particular was really, really keen to try and spread the play out to him. We've got to get better at getting on the end of some of his stuff. I mean, it says something that the player had to take, you know, the game into his own hands and take that shot. But it's good to know that we've got that. You know, I don't think we have enough other players around the pitch scoring goals. And you see, let's say Liverpool made such a big thing about their fullback creating and scoring goals. And, you know, I'd love to see Tierney become a kind of 5-6 goal season fullback. I mean, something like that would be amazing for us.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have a 5 or 6 goal central midfielder, so a 5 or 6 goal left back would be very fucking useful. Ryan, I mean, I don't know if you saw it. There was a video doing the rounds before the game where, you know, the way they have these open training sessions before the European games, and, you know, people can film from a bit of a distance, and they were doing some kind of a drill, and I think Tierney, they were doing like the one touch kind of thing, and I think Tierney got accused of maybe taking 2 touches, and David Luiz came over, and Tierney didn't take very kindly to it. The first thing he did was he ran away. There's a group of footballs, and he just fucking leathered one as far away as he could. And he came back then, and he was a bit like, and there was another one lying there, and he just fucking leathered that one as far as he could. I mean, is that a David Luiz assist? In its own way, whatever he did, he got him like...
Fuck it. Why not?
If you're going to give assists for all kinds of things, you might as well give him one for that. But, you know, he really did hit that ball with some conviction tonight.
Yeah, I mean, we have a thing on Stadio which was kind of born out of a goal that Viv Miedema scored against Reading, I think it was, called the Angry Goal. Mm. And it was actually an award that we gave out in our end of year awards, Angry Goal of the Year. And it's really funny that whenever a goal like this happens, my mentions are just angry goal. That was an angry goal, right? Angry goal, angry goal. And so many people were just like, Kieran Tierney, angry goal at Stadio. Kieran Tierney, angry goal at Rijnhoorn. It's like, I think I responded to one guy just being like, abso-fucking-lutely. That was it. It was a very angry goal. Because, and an angry celebration as well. The clenched fist, like, fucking, do I have to do this all myself, lads, kind of thing.
Yeah,
I struggle to find the words to praise Kieran Tierney enough. I think he has a potential. Well, there's an argument to be made that he's probably the best signing we've signed in the last few years. And even with Thomas Partey coming in, we haven't seen the true effect or the benefit of having Thomas Partey in the squad. I think the upside to Kieran Tierney, or his, to quote a basketball term, like his ceiling is so high. For the price that we paid for him and what he's already delivered for us in more than just his like footballing skill set as well, I think in terms of leadership at such a young age. I mean, this is a guy who's not even really in his mid-20s yet.
Only 23, is he? Or is he still 22?
Yeah.
Or?
I just think he's incredible. And I hope he can maintain fitness for the rest of the season, because I think his... I think that Arsenal have had a tendency to sign a few players recently who maybe don't want to take on a leadership role at Arsenal as much.
Mm.
And I think as soon as he arrived, it was like, oh, this guy wants to. Like, this guy could be, you could give Caratini a captaincy. Well, I mean, obviously that would mean something happened with Aubameyang, but
yeah,
in theory, no one would really, I think, would complain about it. And I think if you think about the captain situation at Arsenal over the last few years, especially under Unai Emery, I think that having a unanimously popular captain says a lot about a player. And he is someone who I think if you gave him the captaincy, there wouldn't be much pushback on from any area of a very divided fan base.
No, I don't think so. Andrew, any thoughts on that? I was going to bring up the C word when it came to Tierney and obviously Aubameyang. No, that's fine. But like, you know, it is an interesting discussion when you think about it, because, you know, there's always this thing when Aubameyang has a quiet game, people go, he's not really a captain. And then, you know, tonight he scores two goals after a hat trick in, you know, the game against Leeds. I know he's missed some chances, but, you know, our idea of a captain, if you come from this part of the world, is quite wedded in the old school ways of a Tony Adams or a Roy Keane or that classic kind of, you know, roll your sleeves up, get on with it kind of character. There are different ways of being a captain, different ways of being a leader. But I think naturally, Kieran Tierney ticks a lot of boxes for a lot of us.
Yeah, it's funny because I keep looking at Tierney and I keep thinking, like, he still looks like a guy who's sort of, he's obviously playing an integral role in the team, but I still look at him and feel like he's only just joined in a way.
Mm.
And I know that he's kind of been around for 18, 20 months now. I think partly because he was obviously injured at the beginning and there was a lot of, you know, talk about him being homesick and getting used to London life and all the rest of it. But I do feel like he's sort of growing into it now. The players see that he's a leader just by what he does on the pitch in training. I mean, these days, like, the captaincy comes with all sorts of other nonsense, you know, that having to stare down the press, do the captains and all the rest. You know, there's a lot of kind of pastoral stuff that goes on in the background, you imagine, that is probably a bit of a distraction and the type of thing that I don't know whether Kieran Tierney particularly want to take on. It's a bit of a burden probably for any professional player when there's so much pressure going on. You're trying to just stay fit and deliver good performances week in, week out. But I have to, he's a great player. I mean, he's old school, isn't he? I mean, that's why we all like him. You know, the shorts, short sleeves every day. It doesn't matter what the weather's like. You know, there's just something kind of almost, yeah, I mean, he's just a throwback kind of character and he kind of revels in that. And I like that. It's really hard not to. I mean, look around the team. I mean, the funny thing is I guess, you know, in any normal circumstances, a Granit Xhaka or a David Luiz would have the armband. And, you know, we're kind of desperately trying to look past that to something new. But, you know, I can live with Kieran just being a very good left back and not having the armband.
Yeah, look, he's not going to have to worry about it for a little while yet anyway. So, he gets that goal. It's 2-2. When did he score that goal? With about, what, 20 minutes to go?
Yeah, I think 67th minute.
Okay, so quite a good lot of time to go, yeah. Okay, 67 minutes, yeah. So that leaves you 23 minutes plus stoppage time. So, you know, basically the best part of half an hour to get another goal. Now, we didn't make another change until Alexandre Lacazette came on, Ryan, and you're thinking, okay, if, you know, we keep going the way we're going. And I think what was, you know, another thing that we did when we brought Lacazette on was concede possession and territory to Benfica in a way that we weren't doing before. We changed the system. Saka went to the right back, and I think we affected the balance of the team in a negative way. So it was immediately, I was sitting there going, bring on another sub, bring on Pepe, put him somewhere, maybe even put him on for Odegaard and play him in that central position, or, you know, by all means, put on Martinelli for Willian, as far as I'm concerned, you know. But in the end, I mean, is the manager justified in the end because we got the win, or was he slightly lucky, or was it a case that by continuing to play the way he thought we should play, he got the reward from players who knew exactly what he wanted?
There was part of me when it happened that I got the impression that he was banking on Benfica not pushing on too much. So even though we kind of did like let them have the ball a little bit more. I think he knew that they weren't really going to, they didn't need to score again. They were still going through, right? So I think for him, he maybe assumed that there would be opportunities to push them a little bit further back. And actually, I think that started to happen. Yeah, there was a couple of moments, and I think it started, the moment where I noticed that it started to happen was because Arsenal started to do this thing, and it really frustrates me where I think Lacazette, for example, as a substitute, is a really good one at that time of the game, because I think he's a bit of a pest for defenders, especially defenders who have played almost the whole game already and are getting a little bit leggy. I think actually having Lacazette to deal with can be quite a problem for them. So I thought that bringing Lacazette on was a smart move. I wasn't sure about the rejig, but then there were a couple of times where he would link up quite well and then just bolt for the box as if to be like, you know, mixer kind of thing, like old school. And I was just like, why are we doing this? Like, why are we doing that? And then weirdly, the goal came from it. And I was a bit like, oh, actually that's, yeah, maybe that kind of does work. So I think I've given up trying to figure out what's going on at any time at Arsenal at the moment, because it's just like, it's like I said before at the top of the show, like I try and be quite zen about them. And I'm like, well, me worrying about this right now isn't going to change the outcome of what I know is going to happen in 15 minutes. So I'm just going to let it see what happens. I know that's a bit of a fence-sitting way to frame this, but I was a bit like, I mean, if I'm being brutally honest, I didn't think that we'd go through. The way that the game was kind of playing out until the goal, I was like, I think this is it. I can't see us. I couldn't actually really see us fashioning another chance.
We don't score late goals. You know, as a rule, it's not something we do.
No, yeah. And I wish we did a little bit more, because they're really fun.
They are. They're great.
Even without fans in Europa League.
I mean, Andrew, what did you make of the Lacazette substitution? Like, okay, you need a goal, you throw on a striker. But I think he just had 5 touches of the ball, made 2 passes. He really didn't get involved in anything dangerous. So, you know, is there, you know, the argument that, okay, we got out of jail, and Saka got us out of the jail that we put ourselves in many ways. You know, the substitution of Lacazette, which obviously was made to give us more attacking threat, didn't really, and it was up to the genius on the right-hand side and the arch poacher goal scorer, who we know, if you put him in positions like that, more often than not is going to score.
Yeah, look, I was literally just looking through over what Arteta said post-game about why he didn't like turn to Pepe or Martinelli instead. And his analysis is that there wasn't much space to run in behind. It was really 2 tight lines, you know, 4-4-1-1 and 5-3-2 at times. So I think what he was expecting was you have to have players who can keep the ball in and around the edge of the box and try and either work a cut back or across to someone who actually gets on the end of it, rather than just assume that you're going to be able to play, you know, nice through balls to guys running on. So I mean, at the same time, I mean, it was pretty obvious there was a good 5 minutes there from about 78 minutes or so onwards where I was watching us and I was like, oh my God, like we have completely ceded any kind of dominance here. I was looking at the lineup and I was trying to figure out if we were playing 3 at the back, whether Saka was playing as a wing back. I couldn't quite make sure or couldn't quite figure it out. At times it looked like we just had 2 defenders and there were these massive big gaps in midfield and they just seemed to be kind of walking through all over us. I was like, what is going on here? And after, you know, it took a few moments, we settled down a little bit. But you're right. I mean, Lacazette didn't contribute a huge amount in those circumstances, it has to be said. But at that point, it was really going to be a case of create one chance, see if you can take it. If you don't, you're out. And, you know, we got lucky tonight, I think.
Yeah, I mean, people will say that the third goal was really high quality, and I think it was. Andrew, just sticking with you very quickly. I mean, it's a great little shift inside, a great ball. Really good movement from Aubameyang. Really good finish. I'm looking at what he's done since he's moved to centre forward in this position. I think we can maybe just write off the Man City game because of the kind of game that it was and the kind of opposition they are. So if you look at the Leeds game, you look at the Benfica game, you look at the Benfica game again tonight, you know, people can pick the bones out of the first leg where he didn't score, but he had chances. You know, at least three good chances at Leeds. He scored a hat-trick, had a couple of other good chances, hit the bar. Tonight, he's got two goals, which have sent us through. I mean, is that not something that, you know, if we accept that this is a team which is imperfect and which is, you know, maybe still trying to figure out how to play this way, that we're creating so much for Aubameyang is a real positive?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think having those, the three kind of like bumblebees behind him, running around, trying to win the ball back, kind of passing it quickly, like that, that is a kind of formula that I think Arteta has stumbled, maybe not stumbled upon, but he's found and he's enjoying it. And, you know, even when he turned to Willian, that was, you know, another bumblebee player, right? A little busybody who's going to try and, I mean, you hope anyway, kind of make those passes, chase down players. I wouldn't put Pepe in that same category. I would sometimes put Martinelli there, but he's not quite, you know, I don't think he's necessarily the kind of on the ball creative player, obviously, but he does have the energy. I think it's really positive to see Aubameyang smiling, scoring, getting into the positions and having opportunities to score. I mean, like, if we're going to score more goals this season, for the rest of the season, then they're probably going to come from him. I don't think some other players are magically going to start kind of scoring goals. I'd like to, I mean, I think everyone's sort of itching to see maybe Martinelli get a few opportunities in some of these games, but the fact is we don't have any leeway to rest players now. You know, we're so sort of playing catch up and have been for so long that unfortunately you've got to stick with the guy who, you know, has a proven track record of doing it, even if he's out of form. And I know you were calling for him to play centre forward for a long, long time when he was out on the left. And, you know, it did feel like we experimented, didn't quite find the right setup to make that work, and maybe now, yeah, we've got that. And look, long may it continue, because I don't think without him we're gonna score enough goals to stay in this competition or qualify for Europe again through the league.
Yeah, Ryan, thoughts on Aubameyang and, you know, how he's being used now and what he's doing? I mean, I think the, you know, all strikers miss chances. That's true, yeah. And I think maybe the reason we get hung up sometimes on Aubameyang missing chances is because we know as a team, we don't really create enough to feel comfortable when somebody misses one. It's not like when Liverpool miss a chance, they go, well, we're going to get another one and another one and another one. With Arsenal, these are like golden eggs, Willy Wonka's golden tickets that we've got to find. And when they come along, it's like we can't let it go. It feels massive when we miss chances because we've become used to being a team which just doesn't fashion enough of them.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you long for those. You remember those Monday nights when we'd have like 28 shots on target and lose 2-1 at home to Swansea or something like that, you know, and like, and they'd only had one shot, not even on target, just one shot.
And still, you know, score twice.
It's like, you know, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And, I think with Aubameyang moving centre forward, I think that I mean to be honest, I never really was too bothered about whether he should play left, whether he should play centre forward, because I think that some of the positions that he gets into, whether he plays centre forward or on the left hand side, are very similar. I think, especially with a fluid, cohesive three behind him, and I think the thing that is fun now is that he does have three young players that I actually likened to on our podcast to kind of reminds me of a different quality maybe, but in terms of the youngsters, I don't think it is. A little bit of Messi at Barcelona. Like, Messi's been dressed like drastically unhappy for ages, but he loves Pedri and he loves Ricky Puig and he loves Ansu Fati, like, and he loves Ousmane Dembele, like these young guys who are around him, you can really tell. And there's a very similar thing there with Aubameyang and Smith Rowe, Saka, and already I think Martin Odegaard, and I think Martinelli. I think in terms of Martinelli fitting in, for example, I would actually at the moment consider giving him a bit of a run on the left hand side instead of Smith Rowe. I think out of those three behind Aubameyang, I actually think Smith Rowe looks like the one, even though Saka could probably do with the rest the most, I think Smith Rowe looks like the one who kind of needs a rest a little bit. And I think Martinelli actually on that left hand side might be a really fun additional element in that trio behind him. But I mean, with Aubameyang, I mean, I think he copped so much stick, I think, because, you know, like when he had that poor run of form, a lot of people were talking about it being the, you know, like very similar to the Ozil situation in terms of like signing a new contract and then his form declining. But I just think that there's such a pressure on his shoulders. You think this guy's the captain, and there's a bit of a like, you know, like the original Star Wars movie when it's like, oh, you're my only hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's kind of like, it's like that with Oba. It's like, if he doesn't do it.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Exactly. There you go. There's the pud. Unless, you know, unless Kieran Tierney's going to step up and start being like 15 goals a season now.
We've really set the bar high for Kieran Tierney tonight. It was five or six, like 10 minutes ago.
This is it. Is he going to be a captain? He's going to be 15. No, you know what I mean, though. I think that until the wealth of chances created or goals scored is kind of spread a little bit more. I actually think that Saka, Odegaard, and potentially Smith Rowe and definitely Martinelli could actually all potentially hit double figures at some point if they stay around. They are all potentially double figures in a season players, I think. So the help is there. It's almost like they're just a little bit too young at the moment to be counted on regularly.
It's a tough one as well, Andrew, isn't it, at the moment, in that we're in classic every game is a final territory. I know Arteta said tonight was a final, and like if this was a final, I think we'd be delighted because we've won it, you know. And I think we're, you know, as we're recording, and maybe it'll feel a little brighter in the morning or whatever it is. It's not that I don't feel positive about winning. It was great. And to win late is always great. But I think there's a sort of a scarring that goes on. You're sort of traumatized by the idea of what was about to happen, that we were going to be the masters of our own exit from Europe yet again, that there's this sort of a sense of relief, which is more palpable than the sense of enjoyment just at this moment in time, you know. But it is difficult, isn't it, to sort of rotate players and bring players in and sort of take chances on players. Someone like Martinelli, for example, you know, when the stakes are so high, you go to Leicester on Sunday. Is that a game that you start him in? Maybe it is. I mean, he's going to have to make some changes for that, you know. But it is tough at this moment in time not to sort of look beyond the, right, the next game is the most important game. And now we've got another couple of games in Europe against fuck knows who. It could be Rangers. It could be Spurs. It could be Man United. Those ghastly options that Ryan's face, if we were on video right now, it would become a new meme. I promise you, he's just a look of disgust on his face at the idea of those options. So it is tough. But I mean, where do you stand on this particular game tonight as you reflect on it after a bit of discussion? Are you more positive, or do you feel like we got out of jail? Is it a show of character that we managed to pull it out of the hat in the end? A mix of all three, a heady cocktail of God knows what.
I think there's a relief. Aubameyang was very big on it being a show of character for sure after the game and his post-game comments. I'm relieved. I think if nothing else, it just keeps us all going a little bit longer. I don't really have any major expectations in the league. I think I look at the fixtures coming up and I just think there's just too many games, the likes of which we've dropped points in too many times for me to kind of feel optimistic. And there's a lot of those games coming up. You know, we've got Leicester, obviously, but we've got Liverpool on the rise and Spurs, it's West Ham. If you don't come through that unscathed, then quite frankly, you're done. So this at least gives us a little bit of hope until tomorrow when the draw happens, and then we can start to freak out again. Interestingly, Leicester are out. They lost 2-0 at home this evening. So,
oh, wow.
So they won't be one of the clubs that we can draw. Well,
this is the beginning of their end-of-season implosion, obviously. You remember what happened last season? They were in a great position, and then it all fell apart.
Yeah, Willian gets his hat-trick on Sunday.
I'd love to see Brendan Rodgers' teeth shining in the sunshine when that happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll dream of that tonight, but yeah, we'll see. I won't be putting on any big bets or accos or anything.
No, I don't think so. Ryan, your very final thoughts on this one, and, you know, is there enough in winning a game the way we won it to say, well, fuck it, you know, we kept going. We worked hard. We didn't play brilliantly, perhaps. Maybe we didn't make the right decisions at times. Maybe the manager didn't make the right substitutions. But there was enough quality in there to get done what we needed to get done, sort of against the odds. in a way, because, you know, we're not a team that, like, if you'd said we need one goal, you'd say, okay, we could probably do that. But for Arsenal to need two goals and go and do it, I mean, it's hard. Okay, I'm not going to say it's a step forward, but it's certainly ticking a box that many people thought couldn't be ticked.
I think it's always a positive when you snatch a win from something that just looks inevitably like anything but during the game. And I mean, I have no insight into what Mikel Arteta's like inside the dressing room, but I get the impression that he will be really hammering home the positives from tonight. You know, I think he will be talking to them about how, look how far we've had to come for a home leg, and yet you were really up against it and you did it. You know, I think that it's a kind of win we haven't, it feels like we haven't had a kind of win like this for a while, actually. And usually in European competitions, these things tend to go quite badly. So I think for me, I mean, I'm not, yeah, obviously that it could have been, you know, plain sailing for sure and way smoother. But I wonder what we actually would have learned from cruising through against Benfica in a way. Does that make sense? I know it sounds a little bit like, like maybe actually a little bit, I don't know, sounds like I'm a masochist, but I'm not. But I mean, maybe it's that little, you know, classic kind of Europe against it and you pull it through. Maybe actually that tells him a little bit of something that we didn't know about Arsenal, because we've not really been like that for a while, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I'm all for it. I think it's a great win, and you know, we're probably going to get Villarreal in the next round and Unai will dump us out. And it'll be like, there you go, redemption and nice old narrative.
That would be, I'd enjoy that. Like, I really don't like playing other English clubs.
No, me neither.
In Europe. It's
that
just
Chelsea Champions League thing will never,
too soon, man. Too
sorry.
Soon.
Sorry. Okay. What was it? 16 years ago? 17?
Yeah. And the Europa League final as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I literally forgot that had happened until you just mentioned it.
Apologies.
Well, there, yeah. More memories for you to stew over tonight, Ryan. But look, we better leave it
guys.
There. Great to have you on. Thanks a million for being here.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
And Andrew Allen, thank you as always.
Yeah, great to see you guys.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Thank you very much indeed to the guys, to Ryan, who is on Twitter @RyanHun, @RyanHun. And of course, one of the presenters, the co-presenter of the Stadio podcast on Ringer FC, along with our friend Musa Okwonga, and part of Righty's House, which you can also find on Ringer FC. It's Ian Wright talking, what more do you want, with other people too, not just Ian. It's good stuff, so make sure you check it out. Also, thank you very much indeed to Andrew Allen, who is on Twitter @AAllensport. I'm going to leave it there for this particular episode. There isn't going to be a bit after the music on this show. I've had a weird, difficult kind of a day, so I'm not really in the mood to make a silly voice or do a silly thing or make something up in that regard. So I hope you'll forgive me for that for this time. All going well, we will have a Leicester preview pod on the Patreon tomorrow. Myself and Lewis will be doing that. For now, though, I just want to say, as always, thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support on Patreon. Thank you for just being part of this. And this thing is something I know that many of you listen to as a form of escapism, but for me as well, doing it can also be a bit of a form of escapism too. And sometimes that's what I need. So look, let's keep fingers crossed for the weekend, that we can respond and recover and do well against Leicester on Sunday. It will be nice to follow up tonight's really good win. Really good. It is a really good win. I mean, it's not the most convincing win of all time, but it's still a really good win. It's a positive result. Can't argue. We're into the last 16. We can follow that up with a result against Leicester. A performance too. let's not be greedy, but let's start with the results. So until the next one, folks, take it easy. Look after yourselves. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.